Hey, great job, guys. Let's give them a hand. Thanks for coming up, you guys. Okay, go to Miss Jennifer and get you a little package, and you can take that back to your seat. Parents, there's some the color on there. There's a snack. Great job. Parents, those goldfish are for the kids, not you. Do not take their goldfish. Okay, so while they're finding their seats, parents, I don't want you to feel left out on the pictures here. So Rob, let's go to these. Let's do it just a little bit more slowly. All right, what is it? Okay, very good. Let's do the next one. Go to the next one. You got it? Very good. American Gothic. George Washington, it doesn't take much there. Very good. Pause right there. Anyone got that one? Hello. All right, let's go to the next one. Now, this one's going to be really difficult. Stop before you show the final picture, Rob. Anyone? All right, let's show it. That's me in my Christmas onesie. I'm getting ready for the big day. That's an image you're going to work hard to get out of your head for the rest of the day. You're welcome for that. So here's a lesson that the New Testament tries to keep coming back to over and over again. And especially the Gospel of John spends a lot of time trying to teach this lesson. And the lesson is this. If you want to truly see the Father, if you want to clearly see the Father for who God is, then you have to see the Son. And if you see the Son, then you're seeing the Father for who God is more clearly than we ever could have otherwise. Now, if you notice, this is a theme that shows up in the Gospel of John quite a bit. And sometimes it's a conversation that Jesus has with the religious leaders. But when he's having this conversation with the religious leaders, it's because they're not buying Jesus' claims. They've got questions, they've got accusations. From what authority are you doing these things? Are you saying these things? What are your credentials? Where is your legitimacy coming from? We want to see your bona fides. And whenever Jesus has these conversations, it keeps coming back to answers like this. Well, when you see me, you see the Father. And if you really knew the Father, you would know who I was. And if you knew who I was, you would know who the Father was. But the fact is, you don't know the Father because you don't know me. And you can imagine those answers never made the religious leaders happy. But it wasn't just the religious leaders with whom Jesus had these kinds of conversations. He had these kinds of conversations with the disciples as well, because they're trying to figure things out. Like in John 14:6, in this well-known exchange, Jesus answered, I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me. If you really knew me, he's talking to his disciples, you will know my Father as well. From now on, you do know him and have seen him. From now on, you do know him and have seen him. And so listen to Philip's follow-up. Lord, show us the Father, and that will be enough. This is embarrassing, Philip. Did you not listen to what Jesus just said? But Philip is probably thinking more along the lines of a glorious God sighting. It's the kind of thing, maybe he's thinking along the lines of the kind of thing that Moses requests and gets in Exodus 33:8, when Moses says to God, "Show me your glory, I pray." Maybe you remember this encounter. That's the one where God informs Moses that full glory exposure will kill a person. You can't take on full glory and survive. And so he says, "I've got this idea. We'll kind of hide you in the cleft of the rock, and you won't see me coming at you head on, but you can see the back of me as I pass by." And I think this is probably the kind of thing that Philip is requesting. Give us one of these earth-shaking, face-glowing, life-altering encounters of the Father, and that will be enough. I always like that line at the end. And that'll be enough. I'm just looking for a full glory exposure. That'll be enough. That'll be enough for me. Verse 9. "Don't you know me, Philip? Even after I've been among you such a long time, anyone who has seen me has seen the Father. How can you say, 'Show us the Father'? Don't you believe that I am in the Father and that the Father is in me? The words I say to you, I do not speak on my own authority. Rather, it is the Father living in me who is doing his work." The grand God sightings are memorable. But the point that Jesus keeps coming back to is this: you are having a glorious God encounter every time you see me, every time you're with me. You're having your grand exposure to God by walking with me every day. And in fact, at the beginning of the Gospel of John, John takes it a step further. In 1:18, "No one has ever seen God. It is God, the only Son, who is close to the Father's heart, who has made him known." Now, I kind of think this is a fascinating claim. Because if you spent a little time in the Old Testament, you actually know there are quite a few encounters of faithful people with God in some capacity. What about Abraham? He saw God, shared a meal with God and the angels. You remember that interesting story we looked at the beginning of our last series on hospitality? Or what about Jacob? He has this weird wrestling match with God and then sees God at the top of a ladder with angels ascending and descending. And we've talked about Moses seeing the back of God, Moses encountering God on Sinai enough that his face is glowing for days after the experience. And the 70 elders, they've got their God experience too at Sinai. And there's Isaiah, he says he has this vision, the Lord seated on a throne, the train of his robe, the temple, and there's Ezekiel. He's visions of God by the river Kabar in Babylon, and on I could go. You get the idea. And so part of us could argue with John's statement at the beginning of the gospel, "No one has seen God." And we would say, "Yeah, but what about, but what about?" Here's the thing. John's very familiar with these stories, but that's not the point. The point that John is making, and the point that Paul makes, and the point that the Hebrew writer makes, and that Jesus makes is this: yes, those are encounters with God, but the picture is never clearer. The picture of who God really is never fully comes into focus until Jesus comes on the scene. And when Jesus comes on the scene, then the scales are removed and we see as if it is for the very first time, no matter what vision or dream or revelation or theophany that someone had, it is only when Jesus comes on the scene that we finally see clearly. This is how the Hebrew writer says it in Hebrews 1:1. Long ago, God spoke to our ancestors in many ways, in various forms, by the prophets. But in these last days, He's spoken to us by a Son, whom He appointed heir of all things, through whom He also created the worlds. He is the reflection of God's glory and the exact imprint of God's very being. I like this line from Brian Zahn's book, Sinners in the Hands of a Loving God. He writes, God has a face and He looks like Jesus. God has a disposition towards sinners, and it's the Spirit of Jesus. That's what Christmas does. The coming of Christ, the life of Christ, introduces us to a new way of seeing God, a clearer way of seeing God. Jesus is the only way to truly see God. In fact, if you follow what John is saying, this is the clear image of God. And everything else that we've learned, it starts to come together. Jesus is the one who reveals it. He unveils it. He lets us understand what was always there, but we sometimes struggled to understand. I think that's why one of Jesus' favorite phrases in the Sermon on the Mount is, now you've heard that it was said, but let me clear up the picture for you. This is what I say to you. Let me bring it into focus. In fact, I'm convinced if we read our New Testament and what they're trying to tell us, that when the image of God finally and fully comes into focus, it doesn't just look like this. What it really looks like is this. You want to know what God is like? You look at the God who is willing to die for us. The God who is willing to suffer for us. The God who comes to serve us instead of to be served. The God who's got all the power but holds His power in check for the sake of us, His people. Zond also writes this. He says, this is why I deeply reject the horrid distortion of God given to us and those angry God motifs. I understand we can use the Bible as our palette to paint a monstrous portrait of God. But when we're finished, if the image doesn't look like Jesus, we've got it wrong. I think that's exactly right. However we understand and paint God, if the image in the end does not look like Jesus, then our image is distorted. Our understanding is flawed. This is the beautiful gospel. It's introduced at the coming of Christ. God is like Jesus. Our God is a God who washes feet and touches lepers and welcomes children and eats with sinners. The God who did not so loathe the world, but so loved the world that He would rather give His life than take a life. God has always been like Jesus. And we've not always known this, but now we do because Jesus opens our eyes. Jesus clears up the picture. God is not a sadistic monster who abhors sinners and dangles them over the fiery pit. God is exactly how Jesus depicts him in his famous parable of the prodigal. Our God is a father who runs to receive and embrace and restore a prodigal people. And that is the good news that we celebrate today. That is the good news we celebrate on Tuesday. That is the good news that we celebrate all throughout the year.